In a world where action films are dumped in theaters and TV, dead on arrival.
I can't go on living this lie!
You need a hero.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
You need a helper.
Hello, hello, nothing to see here.
You need a healer.
That is affirmative.
You need...
We're on the air.
Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy.
That's right. Give us a big snort, buddy.
Yeah,
that's right. We're recording. It's me. It's me. Welcome, everybody, to a special edition of the Action Film Autopsy with me, Professor Rick Myers. And on my right, just waking up from a splayed out nap on his couch,
Nico.
And to the right of him, coming back from a wonderful visit with a friend that she hasn't seen for a while,
Jen.
Yay. Where'd you go for dinner?
The Bar Taco in Port Chester.
Oh, stop torturing me. I love
know.
Bar Taco. They introduced me to some great places. We should record every episode of Bar Taco so no one can hear us.
Yeah, so nobody can hear anything.
Which I think they would be very happy
so
about.
Loud.
So you can hear a sampling of Latin American music.
That's right. And here's some little Latin American music for you right now. There will be spoilers.
Yes.
Spoilers. We're going to, as we've threatened on the last episode, we all went out and saw Incredibles 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And now we are back to talk about that.
Yes.
And you want me to start?
Before we start.
Okay.
I'd just like to say.
Yes.
If you or anyone who's going to a movie.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
Please. Shut up and enjoy the movie. We had some unpleasant experience with a lot of
the
people,
youth.
The youth, well, not just the youth.
But it was largely high school age.
Yeah, kids. Whatever. They were talking like they were hanging out at a house party.
It was a running commentary.
I have to tell them to, like, I have to use
Nico
action.
Nico literally turned and told them, he's like, shut the fuck up.
I have to tell them, shut the fuck up 3 to 4 times.
Which meant it worked. They did not shut the fuck up,
yeah,
did they?
I kept wanting to go and get somebody, but he didn't want me to go because he was like, you're going to miss the movie. But I'm like, I'm already missing
because the movie's really good. I didn't want her to miss the movie.
But before we talk about Incredibles,
yes,
I this isn't quite relevant for this particular podcast, but I do want to say it was really interesting because I'm not sure how I feel about Bao.
Yeah, that was going to be the first thing.
Let me tell them. Okay.
Bao is the short cartoon prior to the Pixar movies. Always have a short, not always,
and this
but most
time
of
thankfully
time.
It wasn't a fucking Frozen short like in front of Coco,
which again I thought was a brilliant idea, which I said on that
it
podcast.
Was but it was just also not a good short.
No, it wasn't, and that was unfortunate. I was very disappointed in that. But Bao, which is not only but it's Chinese, which is works for
it's
Nico
the first,
very interesting.
First female short director at Pixar.
And which is awesome. Yeah. Is she also Chinese? Do you
she's
know?
Also she's
yeah,
Taiwanese.
Taiwanese, which is yeah.
We
it depends on which country people in which country you ask
Bao
whether they
didn't
are Chinese
really
or not.
Land in with our audience though.
Well, understandably, but of course it doesn't matter. I mean, I love one of my most favorite cartoons is the Indian one.
Sanjay's
Super Team,
which I thought was what was that in front of? Do you remember? But I remember I liked it better than the movie, so I think it was The Good Dinosaur.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying they should have just done
You know,
Sanjay's.
That was for a while. That was because even, like, Piper was in front of Finding Dory, and I remember coming out of the movie being wow, I'm glad I paid $8 to see Piper. That was worth it.
Exactly. That's the way I felt about Sanjay. But in any case, Bao I thought was interesting, but I wanted to ask your opinion because I think on the basis of my understanding and spending many years in Hong Kong and other places that are Asian, but this is specifically Chinese,
right.
Given that you're from a Chinese family with a Chinese mom, I think that a lot of Chinese would identify with the behavior of the mother specifically in this short.
Yeah, I would say yes towards the end. However, this short really did not hit a lot of emotional beats for me. It was weird. It wasn't what I expected from all the reviews. I guess that's one of the bad things about hearing reviews. But even without
knowing, me, the premise of what they had, like, I was under the impression that it was like a story about an empty nest, and right. it was the mom having to deal with that, but that was not, like, this was literally about a mom having a child, and then, right. like, the child wanting to leave, like, an empty nester is somebody who has had a kid, and then they're lonely.
Well, like, it is about that, because I thought that it was about that, because she creates, obviously in her mind, mm-hmm. a child out of a bun.
Right, but she didn't. The bun was her child.
Became her child, but then wanted to leave her. And so rather than let the child leave, which she did originally with your actual child who appears at the end of the cartoon.
Right.
She eats it.
Yeah.
Right.
That part 100% didn't land in our theater.
It turned dark, definitely. But
it was shocking. Yeah.
My view of it is that in the beginning, then we set up that the fact that there's someone who left. It didn't feel like she was empty nested, because it was just showing her sort of interaction. She was making the bow, her interaction with her husband.
There was no sense of, like, something that
the
was
husband,
lost.
Yeah.
Right. There wasn't anything showing that there was a kid previously.
Well, he was, they
like,
were
the norm was established that they didn't have a kid,
right.
and then they had a kid, and then he pulled apart, and I was like, okay, that's just parenting.
Not only do I agree with that and understand that and had no problem with it when I watched it.
Oh, I didn't either.
But I thought, just like Get a Horse, the short that was on prior to Frozen, which was a Disney animation movie, not a Pixar specifically, I thought it was very telling. I don't know whether this is just accidental, whether they have a large selection of shorts from their students that they can put onto whatever movie they're releasing, but I thought the limitations and deficiencies of Bao really matched well with what I considered the deficiencies of Incredibles 2.
Okay, I'm interested to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the problems with Bao were this essentially the same problems that I had with Incredibles 2.
Okay.
And I want to make it very clear, and my disclaimer for the listener as well, is that Pixar has gotten to a place in the pantheon of cinema where its only real competition is itself.
Okay, right.
You know, the only thing you can compare it to, and the reason I was disappointed in Incredibles 2.
The bar is so high.
Yeah. I mean, especially the most recent bar. Mm-hmm. If it had been Good Dinosaur, not really much of a problem.
Yeah.
But
and especially
Coco?
Like and even just it being a sequel of the most beloved and like subjectively and objectively, I feel like the best Pixar film.
One of the best. I don't think it's the best, but it's certainly one
of
them.
I mean, it's not my favorite, but I can acknowledge
I'm gonna
that,
put,
like, as, in terms of, like, just filmmaking in general. That's, like, the one that, like, breaks, like, genre-breaking of, like, the whole Brad Bird animation genre. Blah, blah, blah.
And I love spy stuff, and I love the James Bond kind of themes that Giancano, the musician, the composer, puts into them. But did you get that little message, live-action message from the director? And the
pre-roll?
The pre-roll.
Got Samuel L. Jackson.
Jackson. Some of the actors and Brad Bird.
Pixar has been doing that to show their appreciation of people who actually
coming to the theater.
The movie theater.
Yeah. Like, even, like, Love, Simon had one before it, too, where it was hey, a lot of people make these movies. Thanks for supporting it.
That's right. But even so, I found it interesting. The attitude of Brad Bird specifically made me, again, I remembered Bao and I remembered that intro as I came out of Incredibles. So here's the situation. Incredibles starts, and I'm loving it. I want to love it.
You're saying?
Incredibles 2, I'm loving it. I thankfully am in a theater full of kids and adults who acted respectfully and didn't, you know, take it as an opportunity just to continue their little friendly adventures with each other at in a public place.
Right.
Everybody was digging it. It was also great because I loved it because we had all colors, all ages, all sexes in the audience. And I went, this is the mark of a good film.
For us, it was there wasn't as many kids, but there's definitely
you
a
went
variety.
Late.
Yeah, we're later.
Yeah,
right,
I went early.
We went at 9 o'clock, so it was definitely a variety of people, like male and female. Yeah. I would say it was pretty split.
And
half.
The group was like for me it was interesting, the Pixar logo was different, that they used a different logo. I mean, the Disney castle they've been changing
they did it all in incredible style,
but it was interesting. This was the first Pixar film where they did change the the logo, and then but it was like people applauded at the logo, people applauded at the title, people applauded at the end. Like, people were down, but like again, this audience, there was just like a running commentary because like I've been in rambunctious theaters, like the Star Wars Force Awakens. We saw it, you know, the same thing Thursday, like the first screening, you could see it,
right?
And that was the best movie going experience I've ever been in, outside of like an Alamo Draft House, because they applauded at the cameos.
Cheers.
They and then they immediately shut up, and like, it was just
awesome.
The best people who wanted to be there and respected like
that's one of the you know, let's digress for a second, the magic of cinema.
Oh, Alamo Draft House.
I went to the magic of cinema is you brought me back to, we went to the premiere in New York of the public premiere of Casino Royale at one of the board, the Ziegfeld, which was one of the most beautiful.
Our Peanuts premiere was there.
Oh my gosh, it's just an awesome theater.
It's so
right before it shut down. And we came in, the place was, it's a big, big theater. Everyone in that theater was an inveterate fan of James Bond. People were wearing gowns, people were wearing tuxedos, people were wearing James Bond's watches, and we would, and they would compare and contrast the watches. Oh, that one's from the Roger Moore era, that one's from the Sean Connery era. And it was just like one of the most delightful and energetic, and everybody's talking about it afterwards, of course. Casino Royale
was like
when
I
awesome
see the Digimon movies in theater.
Right, there you go. And that's, so it's great when you have that crowd. Now, here's the situation, though. I went to the 6 o'clock show. When I came out, again, it was kids and adults. They were excited, very, very excited coming in, especially the adults who had seen the original 14 years ago or whatever it was. But when they came out, I would, I did my usual thing because I went to my favorite theater where the staff knows me. And I said, what'd you think? How'd you like it? And everyone liked it, but they liked it like that. They didn't go, it was great! They went, I liked it. And I went, okay, because I liked it too. But as it was coming out, I'm going, even before I was coming out, I was the only one in the whole theater who stayed through the credits.
Right.
And the credits were animated throughout.
Yeah,
it was delightful.
And the very last animation.
Oh, was the
credits.
The mole guy.
Was the mole guy.
He got away,
He got away.
Yeah. I love that.
And also there's something else that got away. The raccoon.
Oh yeah.
And I went, I get it now. I know exactly what my problem is. And my problem was the first half of the movie where everything was being set up. Basically, to me, the movie ended in a way when they left Edna's house. Because that was the last setup. The rest of the movie had to be payoff. And it kind of reminded me of Return of the Jedi in that Brad Bird set up all these wonderful setups.
Yeah, there's like 14 subplots.
Yeah, and then really the best he did in terms of payoffs was softballs. Every payoff was a softball, and it was beginning to really annoy me. Because he had brought me way up in the first half, and I'm going, oh, this is going to be great. Name the plot line. He said, let's name the plot line.
Well, yeah, we could just go through each family member.
It's got, I mean, older kids were kind of given short shrift. But Jack-Jack, clear payoff. Two payoffs. One with a raccoon, and the other with Edna telling you how many powers he had.
Right.
He had 17. And I'm going, this is gonna be great. Doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Raccoon, doesn't happen. The thing that really set me off, that really surprised me and almost upset me, because it was one of the things that, how could you possibly miss this? When Elastigirl is finally confronting the villain, where did her elastic powers go? Remember what she did? She found a gun somewhere? She found a flare gun.
A flare gun.
Shot the woman through the windshield of a moving supersonic plane.
Yeah.
Well, no, she shot through the windshield.
And the girl was sucked out.
Yeah, sucked out.
But even so, that's dead. I don't care if you're in animation or not. You're dead. There's no way to recover from that. But the point is, she during that entire sequence when she's, you know, well, getting delirium.
She was like she was passing out.
Yeah, yeah,
she was
Yeah, all right. She's passing out. You as animators, what would you have done? I know what I would have done as a writer.
But if
she would have lost.
She could have tried to do one more.
Well,
like,
not just one more.
She was passing out.
I understand that. And if you pass out, what happens? Your body takes over.
Mm-hmm.
So the body would have started elasticizing, going crazy, elasticizing, flopping like a deflated balloon.
I don't agree with that.
I like that she made the conscious choice to pick up the gun and shoot it, though. That would have been
But where did the gun come from?
She hit an emergency box.
I understand that, but again, wasn't set up.
It was set up.
The gun? What gun was set up?
When she was running, when the villain was doing a lot of like nose dives and a lot of maneuvers. With the airplane, she was going over, and then when she come out from the car, when she got into the carpet, she actually hit the emergency. Like,
she smashed it open and fell on the floor.
Okay, that's fine. But it was set up. But you have to admit it's not nearly as satisfying as it could have been. Not even close.
I like what they did more than what you suggested, though.
Well, the reason why...
But in terms of her going floppy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
the reason why...
I don't like that. That's like an unconscious choice for her.
Yeah. Well, that should happen is because the power that she had, she's using it actively. And what you were saying is that the body is doing something that she cannot control. That makes it... That makes it less of a power, more of a... Not disability, but more of something that she can't really.
Yeah, but
control.
I would have carried it on. In other words, when it started happening, that would wake her up enough where she would realize, oh, I can use this. Because that was the other thing. I know, but the whole climax was so annoying because they all lost their abilities to have powers. They all did the most rudimentary things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the movie had set it up that stuff was going to get clever. The whole family is finally together. Mm-hmm. And one could play off the other, off the other, off the other, off the other, and they don't do it.
So here's what I think about that airplane, that whole scene. Towards the end, I wasn't expecting the gun, but I was expecting something.
Something
smart. You know what I was expecting?
What?
While I was watching, I was expecting her using her elasticity.
Yeah.
To restrict her blood flow.
Yeah.
So that way she can still get enough oxygen to her brain to at least land the punch. That's what I thought. They would cut in to somehow she's working that power
inside
of her.
It's animation.
It's not with her arms stretching or whatnot, but
almost like compressing herself.
So one of the things with NASA pilots or very stressful situations with Air Force is that they tell you to breathe in a certain way that you push his air into your brain. You go so you push his air into your brain. So that's one of those things where when that happened, I thought she would have been like that moment while I was watching it, what I was thinking. That would have been something really cool to show that she was contracting all the air using her power
a great idea
in her body.
But remember, we have how many superheroes on this boat? And we have the family. And we have Jack-Jack, who has 17 powers.
I mean,
well, Jack-Jack couldn't control it, though.
But the point is, they had already set that up in the backyard.
Yeah, they trained him.
That they started
they
to train him.
They trained him for certain things.
The only thing that they trained him, which is very hilariously
The zapping.
Was the laser eyes.
Yeah, but then they had all seen, I mean, especially our hero, Mr. Incredible, had seen the child in Edna's place going through the powers.
Of course.
And
but the thing is, like, they never trained the power, though.
I understand
only protect
that.
It.
But come on, start thinking like a writer and as an animator, which is, you're given these characters, you're given the climax. Come on, we would have gone crazy. The three of us would have, I would have had Jack-Jack not be in control of the powers, but the rest of the family would have compensated.
I never would have given him that many powers.
But neither would I have, but the fact is they did. And if they said, okay... In other words, Warren Murphy, when he wrote the Destroyer novels with Richard Sapir, Richard Sapir wrote the first 95 pages and gave Dick the last 95 pages, and he said, here's a bowl of spaghetti, tie the ends together.
Mm.
So if we were given what we were given, I mean, if we, me as a writer, you as an animator, you as a story person, if you were given that ending, we would have had a party.
So I do agree that Jack-Jack should have played a bigger role.
Everybody should have.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
In an imaginative, clever way.
Violet yeah. more involved. But
well,
I just like
Violet's pretty involved towards the end. I mean,
but not in an imaginative way.
Right, of course. But the whole point of, I mean, I guess her story arc, that Dash really was put on the side, which is a shame. Because he's really good.
The villain
in the first
was,
one.
Yeah.
He's really, really good.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he had the, like, he had the ability to take out all the goggles really fast.
Yeah.
He would have done it really, really fast.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so speedsters are always like a power imbalance.
Right.
The goggles, as far as I'm concerned, when those goggles went on Elastigirl, I thought the movie ended.
Well, yeah, for me, to be honest, like...
The villain, yeah.
I was really irritated because literally as soon as the sister came on screen...
We knew it was her.
Yeah, I was just like... A part of me was like, oh, she's designed like a villain, but I was kind of like, oh, but maybe that's the twist, and I'm like...
Exactly.
And then as the movie kept going, I was just like, I was like, Disney and Pixar like to, like, Scooby-Doo, where like, the villain's like somebody you've already met, so I was like,
and also
oh,
the
no,
motive, the motivation was really lame.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was super
lame.
Well,
as soon as they did the exposition with the parents dead, yeah. I was just like...
It's got, yeah.
Yeah, I was just...
And they had the argument, but even so, I was sitting in the audience going, really?
Yeah, the whole
thing. That's what you're going to hinge this whole thing on?
When the reveal happened and Mrs. Incredible, like, when Helen, like, she was, like, made the connection. She's like, oh, that was a closed circuit thing. It had to be you, blah, blah, blah. Like, I kept expecting her, the thing that she was going to, like, realize was going to be, like, this huge thing.
Yeah.
But then it was just, like, it was you, mind control. And I was kind
of,
like...
And then, of course, she doesn't use her powers.
Yeah, I was kind of...
She
like,
just
oh,
lets
okay.
the glasses be put on her.
Yeah.
You know who I wanted the guy to be? Whatever is, what's his name? Spellcaster or whatever? I wanted him to be the villain from the first movie. I wanted him to be unmasked.
Oh, Syndrome?
Yeah, I wanted him to be unmasked with Syndrome.
Syndrome died.
Well, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But the point is that I would have preferred that over what they did.
Well, so what? The other thing also with the villain reveal also, in the beginning, they... Again, with this film, they wanted to specially promote the fact that Miss Incredible, Elastigirl, was able to do all the things that his husband, Mr. Incredible, was able to do, sort of like that woman can do anything, girl power thing.
Right.
So,
except.
And when they first come out together, as soon as that happens, she's like, I trust you. Trust you. Like, hey, because you're a woman. You're a woman in charge type of thing. Like, that was a little bit too much of on the nose
and
for me to
have
not
I mean, I
have
like,
her.
I like that because then she was the... I did like that that was a thing that they talked about and then she was the villain.
And then she becomes a tool.
Yeah, that too.
The Elastigirl becomes a tool.
Yeah.
The whole movie, she's just a tool.
Yeah.
She doesn't get ahead of the game. Another great example of what I'm talking about, which to me, sitting in the audience, is
but her motorcycle scene, sorry.
Yeah, that was awesome. But that's in the first half of the movie.
Yeah, first half of the movie. So from what I briefly read some interviews with Brad Bird. And one of the things he said that is the villain part where they figured out towards the end. And that's what suffered because he wasn't able to plan out a good villain as the first.
But he didn't plan out the action either. And the other payoff that I was really like, this was one of these things where it's like, you shoved this in my face and then you don't do it. What does Edna say at the end? I have your designs for all of eternity, and I am exclusively your designs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at the end, where's their new suits?
Well, no, they haven't had a new suit yet.
I know they should have.
But they didn't have
the
time
last,
to.
When the, doesn't matter. Edna should have shown up as Edna would have.
But
as they're doing their final thing in front of the public where they're all saying the heroes, they come out in their new suits and Edna's in behind them going, of course they have to do that. And they don't.
See, I didn't read that as a setup.
Yeah, I didn't see that as a setup.
It was. It was very much a setup.
For me, and that was very much secondary in the first one.
I mean, they're not going to change the Pixar.
That's another problem.
They're not going to change the outfits. Like, those are iconic at this point.
Well, then don't have her say that. Alfred Hitchcock says, when you set up attention and audience, you are duty-bound to release it. And all of those things they set up.
To be honest,
I think more people in the audience would read that as just like a throwaway joke. Than
I understand that, but I'm not more people.
No,
that's what I understand.
And that was just another problem. That was another symptom of my problem.
See, for me, I was blown away by this movie. The only things that I bumped on again, the villain was a little bit, but like for me, that's been a constant struggle for me with like a lot most of the Disney Pixar movies lately, like both Disney and Pixar,
right?
It's just like Zootopia and Wreck-It Ralph, where it's just kind of like, oh, it's probably you.
And it's also very true of the Marvel ones too.
And the other thing that I bumped on, for me, was a little bit of what I had issues with in Finding Dory, where for me, a lot of the issues I had with Finding Dory were that Finding Nemo was this like really serious film that had established rules,
right?
And then Finding Dory kind of weirdly like ignored them, where you had like a stroller just magically moving through the park because there was an octopus in it, and her, you know, them jumping in different types
and
of water,
and
the otter, yeah. So for me, one of the big things that, as much as I enjoyed the sequences, I did kind of bump on the whole raccoon fight with Jack-Jack.
Yeah.
For me, that was so out of character for, like, the world and the movies and what they were trying to do, that, like, he gets into this fight with this, like, anthropomorphic raccoon. It's not anthropomorphic, but obviously, like, it's, like, sentient enough to have a grudge match with a baby. Like, it was, like, this weird... And I understood, like, expositionally, like, what it was doing for the film.
Right.
But I was kind of just like, this is so
weird. But then
weird.
They dropped it.
But it had it set up, though.
Also, they put the raccoon on the posters.
But even
like,
so, that's not a... That was not what I call a setup. Like my buddy Chris Brown, who draws Hague of the Horrible, he always says, I have a great story idea. And I always wind up, after he tells me the story idea, saying, that's not a story idea. That's a stow idea.
Mm.
You haven't finished the re yet.
Mm.
So that wasn't even... The raccoon on the television, that wasn't a setup. That was a that was an excuse.
Mm.
That was a
set.
That wasn't even a setup.
I'm not talking about it as a set. I'm literally just saying, like, those are my only complaints about this movie, for the most part.
My issue was... I of course have fond memories of the original Incredibles, especially the action sequence.
They said hell in the screenplay. I liked that. That was cool.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Mm-hmm.
However, the finale. I mean, with the boats. I mean, that's right out of Speed 2, which is not a good movie. And so why are you copying Speed 2?
Well, I mean, you could argue that that's right out of the first act. It was the same thing, like large, dangerous object moving towards
Speed. It is, but again, they don't learn anything.
All three big set pieces were the same thing.
Yeah, but they did... But
the drill,
but
the
when you do that,
plane.
In order to satisfy the audience, and in fact to make them... Because you know what my attitude toward action movies, I want it to make me cheer.
Mm.
And when you set up something like that where the three major things are the same,
mm-hmm.
what makes the audience cheer is that you change up the characters learn
mm-hmm.
something. And you can clearly see, and that even happened in the first Incredibles movie,
mm-hmm.
you see that they go, oh
yeah,
that happened last time, let's do this time.
Yeah.
And the audience goes, yeah!
Yeah, like this one for me, like thinking about it, it's like, I never felt like Violet and Dash were in danger like you do in the first one.
Right.
And obviously the first one helps because there is that like somewhat iconic speech that Helen gives them about, you know, like
mm-hmm.
this isn't cartoons, like they will shoot you, they will kill you, they don't care that you're kids. And obviously they did actually show like people shooting at them, like, and then in this one, you know, they're sneaking around the boat and like
they're semi pod people. The Incredibles family now are semi-pod people in this, because they don't really behave the way they used to. They behave in a very superficial way.
Right. I think that's one of the biggest issues.
Well, yeah, Miko, you're saying like emotionally it's not on the same level as the first.
It's
not
definitely
even close.
Not in the post, yeah. So like one of the issues that Jen Egg also complained about yesterday after we watch it is one of the things is that this film happens right after the island.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the fact that they went through this crazy arc from the first one, and now we expect to see another type of arc,
mm-hmm.
or at least the same behavior, and we're not getting that.
Nope.
So like, for me, I mean, the other thing for me, throughout the action, we're going to go into a little bit more on the good side of the action, but right now I'm going to focus a little bit more.
The first half is genius, by the way.
The first half is
first
genius,
is
yeah.
Genius.
It's
I thought that's what was so disappointing
that's
about
what,
the second half.
That's what I love. Like, the first half, the action was just... It was my mouth was on the floor.
The plot
my
was
jaw
great.
Was on the floor.
The animation was amazing.
Right.
The design was amazing.
So they got
into some serious emotional stuff, too.
They did.
Yeah.
So we didn't really explain the story, but anyway, the final act of it is that they're on...
You're not listening to this unless you've seen it.
Yeah. They're on a boat, and then that's what happens. But
they're on a fucking boat.
So there's two points of it where I feel like the characters are so out of character that it doesn't make sense at all.
Uh-huh.
One of them is that Violet fights Boy and knocks her out, but didn't take her goggle.
Right, of course not.
She's the one, like, when right we throughout the film, like, oh, no one else.
Sparrow.
Yeah, right. Like, no one else know the goggle except for the two kids that actually seen them getting their goggle put on and Frozone. But Frozone was already under the spell. So, like, the fact that she didn't take out the goggle, that bothered me a lot. Mm-hmm. The second thing is Mr. Incredible talking to the crushing guy.
Oh, that really bothered me, too.
That
was the story room giving up.
He was blocked. Yeah, exactly. He was blocked by the pipes. He's a fucking Mr. Incredible.
Yeah.
He could have moved those, no problem. He would have, like, the fact that they set up, like, oh, what's the other guy? The other guy, like, oh, where is the other guy? The other guy's still down there protecting the engine. The fact that they set that up, I was expecting some kind of epic fight between the two.
No.
It was literally ended in seconds, which is fine, but the fact that Mr. Incredible gave up and didn't move the pipe because he wasn't able to?
He comes up.
Come on.
He comes up onto the deck and goes, we can't
he didn't
get
even
to,
try.
Yeah, we can't get to the engine. Like,
right.
What?
There's no
effing
way. He could punch through the wall if he wants to get to the engine.
Of course he can.
So that's what I'm saying. That, like, those two moments completely destroy the character for me.
Yeah, but that was, to me, the whole, like I said, from the moment the goggles went on Elastigirl, I said, okay. I mean, I didn't know that at the time. I thought, oh, he's going to come back from this. But no, he just goes in deeper and deeper into mediocrity and superficiality. Nothing was really thrilling in the last half.
So what I was expecting as soon as Helen was captured was that...
The boat.
When they go into the boat, that's fine. What I was expecting, at least, it was the reversal. Because Mr. Incredible in the first one, Mr. Incredible, he went on and he started doing hero stuff and he was captured.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen was the one saving them with the two kids. This one, I thought it was going to be a reversal where Helen was captured, Mr. Incredible is going to go try to rescue and also gets captured, which is fine. But the kids come in and save them again.
Not really fine.
But like, that wasn't... He was taken out right away.
Mm-hmm.
And very unimaginatively.
Very imaginatively,
The last half of that was unimaginative. Matter of fact, as soon as the brother, the Lynch, the whatever, the tool, says we're going to do it on a boat, I went...
Oh, right.
My jaw dropped and my head dropped because... All the boat movies, pretty much, except for a very old one named Juggernaut, all suck.
Yeah.
What are you going onto a boat for?
For me, it was like, when you know that there's this like lunatic is still out there, it's like, why would you isolate all the most important people?
Yeah. Well, they thought they were caught.
And what's so great about, I mean...
It's still like,
they shouldn't have thought they were... That's the point. Not that he was caught, but they shouldn't... No one should have thought
that
was the guy.
At that point,
no one should have thought that.
The guy.
They didn't know that.
No.
Yes, they did. They introduced it as a pizza guy.
Okay.
Like, Helen kept questioning it, and then
cops,
she kept pushing the woman, and then that's when the woman, like, fought with her.
All of it was very makeshift, superficial, contrived. It was contrived.
So here's what I thought. Also, if you want to pick, like, I mean, the fact that she's a villain, that's fine. But if you want to nitpick a little bit more.
Please do.
The fact that she comes in, and she hands Mr. Incredible a drink. While she talked, before she put in the goggle, if they would have just put a little bit of thing, like if Mr. Incredible would have felt a little bit like dizzy or whatever from the drink, meaning that she knows that Mr. Incredible has found out, Helen has found out about her master plan, and she needs to take care of her.
You know,
without her power being in the way, that would have been the best way.
It would have been better.
It would have been better than just shoving the glass into her.
You know what I want. You know what I want. I want characters who are smart. And if they're not smart to start with, I want them to get smarter as the movie goes on. And we saw the original Incredibles. We saw Coco. We saw Inside Out. We saw Up. We know these guys can do this.
Yeah.
And for them to... One awesome setup after another.
I do agree the setup and the payoff.
And also to fumble every single pass. Every single handoff, they fumble. And it's like, it's just like, you better like us, because by the end of this, we're gonna really challenge you.
Another thing that is kind of bad, because I can't tear my filmmaker brain off.
Yeah,
because
good.
One of the things is, when they were having the first, when the villain was able to see all the first-person view of it,
right.
There is one point where everyone's goggles off, but Helen was still wearing the bad Elastigirl suit. And that has a camera on the chest.
That's right.
I thought that would have been something else playing where she was able still one step ahead of them with this whole plan. And then they just changed the suit and just ignored the fact that there's a camera.
Yeah, they dropped, another drop ball.
They just dropped it.
At the end of the movie, I'm the only one sitting in the audience. Everybody else is left.
At that point.
Because when the guys came in, the crew came in, the staff, to clean up, they said, "What'd you think?" And I gave them my look. I gave them a look going, "I'm just confused.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to process why they didn't complete any pass." I mean, that reminded me again of Brad Bird's face during that little pre-clip. And I was going, and he says, keep coming back because, they've got some really good stuff coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going like, you didn't subconsciously make this aversion therapy, did you? I mean, because you're so pissed off that, Tomorrowland failed and you're forced to doing Pixar cartoons. Are you pissed about that? So subconsciously, you sabotaged this?
I was trying to figure that out because I know, like, one of the big things that came out of the first Incredibles was, like, the whole, a lot of his, the thesis behind, like, Syndrome and everything was a lot of, like, that kind of, like, the Ayn Rand kind of philosophy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, like, the whole time we were watching, like, I was kind of, like, it was one of those things where, like, we've been spoiled a little bit recently with some, with Black Panther and other ones with, like, some really interesting villains. And for me,
Infinity War,
the whole thing, with her, the whole thing was just, like, people, like, they, like, started out, like, really interesting where they were, like, people don't want to actually do things. Like, they want to pay for, they want the convenient version even if it's not as good.
Yeah.
And, like,
some interesting stuff.
Yeah, like, it started out strong, but
then it kind of just dropped.
Was like, you're mad that people like phones, but like you make phones. Like, it was like that.
Yeah, the whole thing. It just, all these great ideas, the relationship between the pars,
and like also it didn't really match her backstory. Because if
also
anything, you could argue even because with Syndrome, like his backstory, like, clearly fueled why he was the way he was, but with her, if anything, it was like cool, like more screens, like if her parents' house had like more screens and more things, more communication,
if
like then they would have been safer.
She had to bend over backwards
They did. They have a safe house. They just refuse to go because he believed in the superhero will save them.
If she was that concerned, like, she could have had, like, motion sensor cameras that, like, immediately, like, called the police or did something.
But even so.
I'm just saying, like,
she was too young at the point.
Guys,
that's the whole
thing.
That's
not even relevant anymore. Even so, no matter what the decision is, her decision after that to do what she did to superheroes is another one of those Lex Luthor, Batman v Superman decisions that's ludicrous. I mean, it makes what she's trying to accomplish by, and nobody will ever depend and you'll be outlawed forever by doing what you're doing? No, that's not going to work that way. It's absurd what you're doing. It won't work.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it does work, it's absurd. I mean, it requires, but I think she's a superhero in that Elastigirl has a body that shapes. This villain's brain does that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she twists herself in knots and turned back in on herself to try to figure out this ridiculous plot.
Also, she kept distracting me because she looked like the girl from Megamind.
She did. I want to make it very clear to our listeners that Incredibles 2 is not a bad movie. It's just not as good a movie as it should have been compared to other Pixar movies. It's great compared to Minions 3 or a variety of other ones.
I mean, one of the best.
But
I mean, you two always do this, though.
Or Trolls.
We left Kubo, and I was, like, sitting there, and I was like, oh, I really like that. Like, I need time to process it. And you guys, like, immediately were like,
well, we processed it here, quickly.
Well, that's, like, I think for me, it's like, we literally saw this movie yesterday, and, like, you guys are like, da, 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 and I'm just like, I haven't had time to, like, process.
Well, here you go, Jen. This is one of the things I like to teach you as a elder statesman writer, is that I'm processing as it goes.
Yeah, that's one of the things I can turn off.
But, I'm doing structure.
I process it in different ways, but continue.
Yeah, but as a writer, I'm a great believer in structure and detail. I mean, when they, it was a very famous thing when a guy, the author of Into the Hot Zone, was working with her at with his editor. He is embarrassed because all his notes are all over the floor, and he says to his editor, "God is in the detail," and she goes, "No, God is in the structure." And I'm a total believer of that as a book writer and other writer, a magazine, all these different writers I am. Because God is in the structure.
For me, it's like I want to see like if it lands just like on feeling, because that's more, that's what the majority of the people are going to take away from it.
I understand that, but it, the feel, you know, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. It has to land on the feeling, but to make the feeling work, mm-hmm. you have to understand the setup and payoff structure.
Oh, no, I know for sure. But again, for me, it's like I'm pretty sure most of the people, and that's, I'm not saying this,
I don't care what
most people. Oh, no, I know. Yeah. And I'm saying that that's not an excuse to not talk about it in this way.
Yeah, because you're.
But for me, it's interesting because it's like most people are going to just blindly be
but
like,
but that's the audience. Da, 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 da. But that's why you don't listen. That's why, you know, when you do these marketing surveys of audiences and you say, what did you like? Most people that I just, in terms of my understanding and research, they don't know. Mm-hmm. If that's up to the creative person to know what's wrong. And how to make it stronger, and how to make it better, and how to make them react, and how to make them laugh, cry,
so then what
scream,
do you, what do you
and
think
cheer.
It was that, do you think it was like, like what made you think, because the screenplay was written by Brad Bird.
Right.
So like what made, what do you suspect is why like they phoned it in the third act?
Well, that I just gave you the only the easiest theory for me to come, because I'm using psychology, which it's in
what,
this case I believe it's I believe it's subconscious.
I personally think that's just knowing how movie
Got lazy, or the deadline was too tight.
Yeah, the deadline was too tight. It sounds like, again, from the interview that I read, it sounds like they didn't really figure out the villain towards the end, and they were trying to tie all the knots together.
Yeah, but
I think
again,
that's why.
They didn't have all the time to close up all the loose ends.
Yeah.
That's why I was
but
when
none
when,
of them?
When you were saying like, oh, it didn't compare to all these movies. Like this, like Miss, like the Incredibles 2, at its core. It doesn't even compare, like, the second half doesn't even compare to the first half.
Very much so.
Because it's so first act heavy. So, we're gonna, like, let's talk about a little bit good, like, the good thing about this film.
But again, you pointed out the thing that really set me off, which was that Crusher guy.
Right.
And they just, I mean, you're in a story room with a bunch of people, and they say, what are we gonna do with this scene? And everybody, basically, as far as we could tell on... by what happened on screen, mm-hmm. everybody goes, I don't know.
See, but for me,
I don't care.
For me, I look at that scene and I think about, oh, like, they probably had something. They probably needed to shave 5 minutes off of this movie.
Yeah.
What's something we need to get rid of really quickly? Oh, this isn't relevant. Like, we need to just jump over this scene, but we have to come up with a reason. Okay, yeah. We'll do that.
Well, let me premiere, for your benefit, my new rules. Before, you know, I was talking about all these other things I talked about at Disney. I have a new rule for writers and all creative people, and I call it infighting, since I'm the big action film autopsy professor. This is called infighting. Whenever you have any problem with story, you want to call upon the four ins. And the ins are make it involving, make it inspired, make it inventive, and make it insightful. So we have a problem with that Crusher guy just lying there. Mm-hmm. And the four questions I ask myself, and I think everyone should ask themselves, no matter how tired or drunk they are, how to make this involving, how to make it inspired, how to make it inventive, and how to make it insightful. Every single scene. Because then you have a 10. Then you have a 10 across the board.
I think, but then you also probably have a movie that's like 10 minutes over and $10 million over.
I disagree, because even when you get into that problem, you bring the four ends.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, no, I agree, but then, again, that's...
Because it doesn't take more time to be inspiring. It just takes a little more thought.
Well, yeah, but like the thing that I've noticed too with these movies is... It's very much like you think you can make one change to one scene and then like you pull it out and then everything dominoes.
Yeah, because I'm into structure.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't play Jenga. Everything has to fit. That's why
ideally it is a linear thing and pre-production actually happens not while the film is in production.
I know.
That's just not
But we go back to the metaphor of tying the spaghetti strands together. You can't leave one undone.
Well, with this film, the reason, like, it does definitely does run along a little bit, in that they definitely have to cut certain things. One of the biggest reason why is because they have two parallel stories happening at the same time.
Right.
Whereas the first one is pretty
linear. Right.
Because it's Mr. Incredible with his power fantasy of going, getting back to doing hero work, and then getting captured, and then Mrs. Incredible, Helen, going in and save him. There wasn't much of showing what her day-to-day life is,
right.
But this one, they're trying to show the husband's side, where the husband's taking care of the kids, and then at the same time showing Helen going to do all the hero work, which is, again, that chase scene with the with how she was able to chase her, use her bike, and how to chase the rail, the air rail train down. That was one of the best.
That was beautifully done.
That was a great action. It shows she's like very smart, like beautifully executed.
She's using her power.
Her power, like, executed really well.
Which she
the fact that
doing.
She adapted slowly. It shows her progression of adapting to the crazy torque of the motorcycle that she had, and the situation that she had. It was
she behaved in a smart way.
She did.
She was smart.
And she even questioned...
So why did that go away?
Right.
Honestly,
and then she even questioned her... she even questioned her, like...
Right.
Sort of her stand in this, because she was standing there waiting for crimes to happen.
Right.
And that's one of those things she was doing... She was questioning it because that's never a thing that superhero do.
Right.
You just... You go when help is needed. You don't wait... You don't wait and stand still as a superhero waiting for that to happen. That sounds like you want something to happen.
You're right.
And that's not something she wants.
But unfortunately, my attitude is, so what? Because then they drop it.
Yeah.
Again, there's a ball that should have been passed.
There's a lot of emotion that was set up in the beginning, and it was dropped. Yeah.
And also, and not handled well, and not paid off well.
Right.
I mean, this movie...
It's still good, though.
Got moved up a year. I think people forget that.
Yeah, that could have. But again, it's kind of like, this is why I'm able to. My present partner on the novel, the ghostwritten novels, he was going, how do you do this? You know, he went to his agent and said, you know, if you want Rick to write a chapter in a day where it has a beginning, middle, and end, and it pays off, he's the master at that. And that's what I've been developing. And that's very sweet of him to say. I don't necessarily agree, but I do feel that that's my goal always. That when something like the things that happen in this movie, my attitude by the middle of the movie was, the only way this can pay off in spades successfully is if this happens. If this doesn't happen, that's why I was so thrilled. I hate M. Night Shyamalan right now, but in Sixth Sense, in the middle of Sixth Sense, I said to myself, oh, it would be awesome if he was dead, if he was a ghost. And then when it happens at the end, I'm going, perfect. And that's the reason that movie is so successful, because it works perfectly.
So
I rewrote this movie. I know what I would have done.
Right. So I was gonna say that, like, with the beginning and the end, they do try to make it. They try to make one of those films where the beginning it's a certain way and the end it's a certain way.
Yeah.
But the only two things that they really change is A. is that they finally stopped the object that was heading towards the city. They did stop it. In the first one, they did. Like, in the first act, they didn't.
In a very unimaginative way.
Exactly. Yeah. The second one is that Violet, in the beginning, didn't want to babysit Jack. In the end, I guess she did?
Sort of. What happens is the movie starts like this. You can't see this, listener, but I'm holding my hands out. The movie starts very, very, very thick. And by the end of the movie, it's very, very, very thin.
Very thin, yeah.
And it's like, that's not the trajectory you want. But it should do fine. I'm going to be very interested to see how well it does. And I, as usual, hope for the best.
It
already broke records.
It broke the Thursday night opening.
But let's see what happens next weekend.
Right. I still enjoyed it.
I did too.
Thoroughly. Again, the action in the first act and the emotion in the first act was really good. The slow descent to chaos and slow descent to insanity.
Dissatisfaction.
I was going to say for Mr. Incredible, like, trying parenting, that was quite satisfying for me. For, like, he's sort of, like, he's struggled between wanted to provide and wanted to become this macho man, and eventually giving up that kind of feeling to focus on, like, again, learning math for Dash so you can teach Dash.
First half.
How to do math. Mm-hmm. That was sweet. And that again, like, in the beginning, the motion was good. It was towards the end, it becomes a mindless action film.
And but not a good one.
Yeah, but the fact that there's so many, like you said, there's so many knots tied up in the beginning,
yeah,
that you just want them to slowly unfold every single one. And the fact that it didn't, it was very satisfying.
Yeah, because if they had done a couple, it would have been fine. They didn't do any. They bobbled everything.
Yeah, even toward, like you say, even towards the end, where the mole people got away, and that all of those,
raccoon,
like, oh,
away.
They just, like, oh, we just, she's
yeah,
gone
just
now.
Forget it. Just forget it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, oh, okay, all right.
Like, he's still out there. He still have the money.
I suppose it's number three. They're planning that for number three. He's the last thing seen on the screen.
Right.
He's the last figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, in the beginning, he was so, like,
I mean,
the Mo people was so
funny
smart.
If every film, yeah, if they keep, right, making Incredibles films, I want everyone to start and end with the mole guy.
Yeah, but here's, and they do too, because of course that's the voice of John Ratzenberg, who is Pixar's lucky charm.
Mm.
But I wanted to feel at least half as much as the way I felt at the first Incredibles, which was
a great feeling
of triumph. Mm. There was no triumph at the end of this. None. Go ahead. How much am I what?
Well, no. I guess, like, part of it's like easier to sit
in judgment.
Well, I mean, yes, but I was going to say too, it's like Incredibles 1 has had 13, 14 years to, like, gestate in our hearts.
But that's the point.
But it's also just, I know, guys, I'm also acknowledging that it's also just a stronger family.
And also, all I wanted them to do is live up to what they set up. That's all I wanted them to do. And you know, and if you're going to set up, I haven't counted how many, but let's say it's a half a dozen things, and you don't pay off any of them. I mean, if you don't pay off one or two, then that's a oversight. You don't pay off three or four, that's a bit of a problem. If you don't pay off any of them, something's wrong.
So you feel like they didn't pay off anything, or that they were just bad payoffs? Or like just weak payoffs?
Well, yeah, I should weak make payoffs. That clear, yeah. When I say payoff, I mean payoff well.
So, for me,
they paid off, but they paid off really lamely and really poorly.
It's like, for me, for the first film, all of the characters are actually thinking. Like,
yes!
You know, when Dash running towards the water, he's like, yes, I figured out my power. When Violet was using her power, when Violet was able to, like, sort of be, like, overcome her shyness,
right,
she was thinking about it. When
get delighted.
Right,
the audience is delighted in this.
When Mr. Incredible thought about the whole, like, oh, the machine attack itself, that's the only thing can destroy itself. It's like, that was a good thing. And like when Helen picked up the hair and thought something was going on, that was all characters thinking.
Look how they
internally
solved this problem, main problem of the boat not hitting the city.
So like this one, none of the characters actually thinking.
Thought.
The only, like, so when Helen caught the pizza guy, the first thing she would have, if it was actually she's in character, the first thing she would have done was like, I don't think, like, as immediately as she took off the mask and everything, and when the pizza guy was going into the police car, she would have thought, no, that's not him. And everyone would have come like, that's totally him. You got him.
Yeah.
Like, which what kind of happened?
But then she gave up.
It happened later.
Yeah, it happened later.
And
it
then,
didn't happen right away.
No,
she would have questioned it away.
She did question it right away, but she let it drop too fast.
Right.
That's what
you're
saying.
Yeah.
No, let's put it this way.
It just wasn't, the character wasn't thinking.
It's one thing to, and neither were the filmmakers, apparently.
Yeah.
It's like, biting off more than you can chew is one thing, but spitting it out, basically in the audience's face and saying, yeah, you'll take it because you're willing to like us because you like us. We're willing to give you this kind of crappy buffet that starts really well, but then the dessert table
is dreadful. Yeah, the first half was so good. They deal with so many problems, like they're losing their house, they're living in a motel, and like the kids, how to deal with that, and like the
relationship between the two of them was awesome.
Yeah, with the two of them, like the bed side talk, that was amazing.
And
like they gave all of them those up towards the end where none of the characters thinking. That's why Violet didn't take out the mask. That's why Dash didn't do anything at all, pretty much.
We're repeating ourselves at this point.
Yeah.
And it's like, and we're up to our usual deadline anyhow.
Okay.
Our usual 50-minute, who would have thought we could beat this movie up that much. And what's interesting, of course, is I wasn't intending to beat it up this much. But no. the more I thought about it, yeah, the more I thought about it, the more upset I got.
I'm just sitting here like, it was probably in a really good place, and then it got bumped up a year early, and then as they started to pick it apart and get into production and things started to unravel, they had to quickly get it together. Part of me, I'm just like, I understand the struggle.
I understand that, too, at the same time.
You can still criticize that.
That's one of those things that you expected more out of Pixar. You expected if the film's not strong enough,
you expected them
to push back instead of push forward.
For me, it's like, of all the films to, like, you would want them to spend the most time on, this is the one.
This is one of them.
So for me, the fact that, like, this was the one that they slotted in place of Toy Story 4, I'm a little bit like, that was dumb.
Yeah, that was dumb. So, in any case, it's good. Not great. It should have been magnificent. It should have been amazing. It should have been a classic. Now, I'm just going to think of it as one of the greatest missed opportunities in their filmography.
See, but I think everybody else is going to say it's like...
I don't care what everybody else is.
Yeah. Just saying, guys.
I only care about what I think.
Well, most people, of course, most people, again, like, the action was great in the beginning. The action was okay at the end.
Oh, yeah, didn't you say there was, like, a fight choreographer or something?
Yeah, and again, we were talking about it on the last episode where I was thinking, oh, he's uncredited, eh? And this one really looked like he was uncredited.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all the things he said he helped with, you should have helped more.
Well, again, the first part of it was really good, action included.
But I've already said, I think I said this a couple of times. It doesn't matter to me if the beginning is great, if the ending isn't. If the ending is great and the beginning isn't, then it's still a great movie.
That is true.
But I don't care if the ending is great. It really is. It only makes it worse if the ending is great. The beginning is great. The beginning is great, it makes it worse.
That's definitely how we feel right now.
Yeah.
Because I love the beginning. It was so good. I was, I was grabbing her. I was grabbing her arms while I was watching it, because when all the characters come alive, when Helen, Elastigirl, was chasing the thing, when she was thinking how to get, instead of chasing it side by side, she was thinking
so
how to get there.
When the bike broke.
Yeah, me too.
And how
that was another dropped thing that they could have used later.
Yeah.
If you read my Facebook review, which I did immediately after the movie ended.
And I purposely didn't, because I didn't.
I said very nice things about it. I said that it was, the amazing artwork, extraordinary ambition, and the more I thought about it, the worse it gets. But anyway, do you want to create a new sign-off for tonight?
Jack-Jack is cute as hell.
Jack-Jack was awesome, and again,
drop ball. So
17 powers. Should have seen them all at the end. Should have seen them all. It went after another. Should have seen them all. Anyway.
The next one.
All right, so, guys.
I don't know what the next sign-off would be.
What can be a sign-off? Think of your sign-off. What do you say to each other?
Call each other bitch a lot.
She calls me a bitch a lot.
Of course you do. Fight me. Fight me, bitch. All right, yeah, there we go. That'll be our sign-off for tonight.
That should not be the sign-off.
All right,
I
mean, quick, come up with another one.
You guys, I was like, all right, y'all are being...
All right, let's do it. I'll do one word, you do the next word, you do the last word. You ready?
Oh, man.
Go come up with something.
Okay, go.
Fight.
Me.
Bitch.
Okay, break it up. Break it up. For now.
You don't give up, do you?
Listen in next time for more film fun, frenzy, and friends. Until then,
a real fight.
Check out actionfilmautopsy.com, where the excitement never ends.
Sonic Victory.